Welcome to the NXT Podcast, your home for weekly NXT reviews and insight.
The beautiful part of NXT is that when one dream ends, another dream begins.
Find all of your NXT news, recaps, and analysis right here. So with that being said, we only have one question for you.
Are you ready?
We thought so. Let's get the show started right now.
Oh, ladies and gentlemen, welcome back to the NXT Podcast. As always, I am your host. My name is Zachary Smith, here with you each and every week on this fantastic network of shows we have for you every day, just about bringing you quality wrestling entertainment. Now, we have a very fun show to talk about this week, and I'm very excited to get to it in just a minute. We had a couple title matches. Really just one title match, if I'm going to be honest with you. But it more than made up for the fact that there really was only one title match. And we had some interesting stuff. We had the return of the NXT champion Finn Balor. So it's not going to be a vacated title situation, which is always a good thing, especially considering Finn got that title after Karrion Kross had to vacate it. So it's very good that he's going to be around. So, as you know, we talk generally about the news and notes. We talk about what's going on in wrestling in general. And in this case, I have a big positive and I have a big negative to talk about here today. So, we're going to start with the positive. And that is that, as of Monday Night Raw, Drew McIntyre is now a two-time WWE champion. And we had a lot of balls up in the air. We had Randy Orton as our WWE champion as of Hell in a Cell. We had Drew McIntyre breathing down his neck. We had The Fiend presumably breathing down his neck, although you never really know with The Fiend. Although we'll talk about that in just a sec. But they made the title match, surprisingly, on Raw. And it was sort of similar to what happened to Jinder Mahal. If you'll remember, Jinder Mahal was the, WWE champion, and Brock Lesnar was the Universal champion, and Survivor Series, as of late, has been pitting champions against champions. So, as of that point, we were going to have Jinder Mahal versus Brock Lesnar. Not a particularly exciting match for anybody. I very much respect what Jinder Mahal did in reinventing himself, but he was an experiment for WWE. But on a SmackDown before Survivor Series, AJ Styles beat Jinder Mahal to become the WWE champion, which resulted in the fantastic AJ Styles-Brock Lesnar match. So it seems the WWE is rather fond of setting up that big match and then giving you a surprise, essentially, right before the show and switching things up. So, as I said, we had a lot of balls in the air. We had Randy Orton as our WWE champion. He's doing some of the best work of his career, which is very impressive given the stage of his career that he is at. You had Drew and The Fiend breathing down his neck. You had Miz, who is Mr. Money in the Bank, which I love. I like Otis, but they never took him seriously. He was never going to be the champion. He just wasn't. It was a cool moment when he won, just because you certainly didn't expect it, but he wasn't going to go anywhere with it. The Miz can. And so you had a few things going on. You had the potential return of Edge at some point. So you weren't really sure how we were going to do this going forward. We weren't sure if Randy was going to be a long-term champion. I think we all kind of assumed that we were saving the title for Edge and Randy Orton. And so you kind of go with the assumption that he's going to hold that title. But you had a lot of ways out of it. it occurs to me now that if you had stuck with the Randy Orton-Roman Reigns match, you would have had two heels or two bad guys facing each other. Now, that's fine. There are two different people that can have an issue with each other. But WWE tends to not want to put two heels or two bad guys together. WWE, for all the talk of Shades of Grey and their characters ever since Vince went on TV and basically told you wrestling isn't real and that they're characters, for all that talk, that much more often than not, they are going to have a babyface or a good guy, and they're going to have a heel or a bad guy. That also always applies to women's matches as well, and they tend to want to do title matches one-on-one. So I don't know if it was that they just felt better about having Drew as champion, or they want to save Randy Orton for Edge, and they realized, as I think we did, that match does not need a championship, or maybe it's as simple as they wanted Drew McIntyre, a babyface, or good guy, to go against Roman Reigns, a bad guy. Whatever the reason for that, I don't particularly care because, again, the headline here is that Drew is now a two-time WWE champion. Now, you'll remember when he lost that title, I was simultaneously okay and not okay with it in that Randy Orton, again, doing some of the best work of his career. And so I couldn't be too mad at Randy winning. It made enough sense. But I was very sad to see Drew lose for a couple reasons. One, because I was very scared of how they were going to use him after he lost the title. Think Kofi Kingston when he lost to Brock Lesnar in 6 seconds on the Fox debut of SmackDown, which was a ridiculous slap in the face to everything that he had accomplished and his title reign as a whole. But more egregious than that is that after losing the title, he basically never mentioned it again and went back to being in a tag team. He essentially got his reward for all his years of service and then was essentially told to just forget about it. That devalued him as a singles competitor, and New Day came back and we're rolling from there. He's doing just fine, but WWE has a tendency to not know what to do with former champions. Now, that has not at all been the case with Drew McIntyre. In a lot of cases, we still started out the show with Drew McIntyre without the title, which looks super weird. Now, when I picture Drew in my head, I picture him with the WWE Championship. The other reason that I was very nervous, or rather that I am excited now, is that Drew has been a fantastic WWE champion. When you make somebody a champion for the first time, especially at WrestleMania, that puts a lot of weight on somebody's shoulders. You're going to be the person who's featured on Raw. You need to look strong. You need the company's help with that, but you have to make the most of the moments that you have. And Drew did that and more on every segment that he was in. I don't remember a bad segment. I remember segments being better than others, but he made a WWE title match against Bobby Roode good and a WWE pay-per-view title match with Dolph Ziggler important to me. Drew has been the most convincing WWE champion that we've had, well, I guess since Brock Lesnar and going into April's WrestleMania, but he's been the guy who is most clearly to me a WWE champion. And he has gotten the superstar treatment since winning that championship in April, and even after losing it, he still got that superstar treatment, which is what you need to do, because when he wins the title on a Raw, it feels important. And you need that. So now that he's WWE champion again, it doesn't just feel like they wanted somebody else to be champion. It feels like the championship is back home. And now I'm even more excited for Survivor Series because I'm very excited to see Roman Reigns, who they have built correctly as an indestructible Superman, against Drew McIntyre, who they've booked somewhat in the same way. Drew tends to sell more just because he's had more matches in this position on this run. And they're building the story with Roman, whereas they've told a big part of it with Drew. So it just feels, I don't know, it feels like the wrestling version of comfort food to have Drew be the WWE champion again. And I'm very happy I got to say that. I genuinely didn't know if we were going to see Drew as WWE champion again. There were people speculating that, you know, he would win the title back when there were fans so he could get that moment. And while I certainly want that for him, I didn't necessarily buy it because I think I said something to the effect of, I don't trust WWE to make a decision for 10 minutes from now, much less 10 months from now. But again, the headline is Drew McIntyre is once again your WWE champion, and it just feels right. I don't know what we're doing with Randy after this. I'm going to assume that this means that Edge is pretty close to being back, and maybe they're going to ramp him back into that, kill some time with him until Edge comes back, because they're definitely going to want to finish that. And then I genuinely look forward to seeing Drew on Raw every week. He's one of the reasons that I watch. And then we have to pivot to our negative, which was another reason to watch Raw, and that is Zelina Vega. Zelina Vega is, along with Drew and Bayley and Sasha Banks, she's one of the people that took this pandemic and used the time that she had and turned herself into even more of a star. She became more than just the manager. She became the leader of a group, and she proved that she's a great talker. She's great in the ring. She's a great manager. She can do everything at an incredible level. Now, it's getting harder to be a fan of the WWE while Vince is running it. And for some context here, through coronavirus, through the initial Twitch stages, through a lot of things, I've used this segment to talk about the WWE and specifically the mindset of the WWE under Vince McMahon to highlight a lot of the problems that I have had with decisions that they've made when they laid off a bunch of loyal employees for no reason during their most successful financial year in the company's history, despite not deserving that at all based on the product they produce. And I took a step back from that. I made the conscious decision to not do that unless something egregious happened. I essentially made a deal with myself because I don't want to come on here every week and make it sound like I'm the type of wrestling fan that is technically a wrestling fan but only ever points out negative things. That's why when I give you something negative now, I try and give you something positive with it. That's why we start off the show with Drew being WWE champion as opposed to this. Because Zelina Vega was one of the WWE superstars that would stream on Twitch. And her and Alistair, who they are married, had a YouTube channel as well. And so, essentially, AJ Styles, Big E, Zelina Vega, all these people who had these Twitch channels and cameo profiles, Roderick Strong, shut them down. And the reports were that nobody could get a straight answer out of Vince McMahon. They were supposed to have a meeting about it. I don't know if they had it and it went nowhere or if they didn't have it. It seems like they didn't. But basically, they were told that they had to essentially not stream on Twitch for the time being, which I'm sure means for essentially forever, unless they're contractually obligated to do it. So everybody shut down their Twitch except Paige, who essentially said, I'm making good money on Twitch, and more importantly, this is a community and a family to me, and I got hurt working my butt off for you, and I'm doing nothing, so no, I'm going to keep streaming, thanks. And she dared WWE to call her bluff. So nothing has happened to Paige. Zelina Vega tweeted that she supports unions or she supports unionization. I forget which one. A fairly innocuous tweet. I mean, it says a lot with very few words. I took it more as words of support rather than words of action. I didn't necessarily take that to mean Zelina Vega was saying she is going to start a union. I think a lot of people have echoed that statement where they've said that they support unionization, but they don't want to be the person that stands up and actually does it because they're afraid of the consequences. And shortly after that tweet was published by Zelina Vega, the consequences came and Zelina Vega was released. So she got the release and WWE wished her well in her future endeavors. So to recap here, Zelina Vega, who's been nothing but a loyal employee, I have never heard reports of any negative stories about Zelina Vega with anybody. I've never heard anything negative on her from the company or any knock on her personally or professionally. She has always comported herself with class and dignity and professionalism. And then she happens to tweet that she supports unionization, and then she's released right after. That sends a very clear message not only to the other superstars, which I'm sure was the intention, but it also sends a message to the fans. The WWE doesn't care about you, the fan, except for they make money off of you, and they certainly don't care about their employees, or rather independent contractors, because at even the slightest mention of a union, which would stop them from railroading their talent into disadvantageous positions, it's the same reason WWE has brainwashed all of the executives to say, oh, I hate it when talent brings in a lawyer, it just muddies everything up. Yeah, by muddy everything up, they mean the lawyer reads the contract and understands it and takes out all the bullcrap that they try and put in those contracts to essentially screw over their talent. They don't like not having a monopoly on wrestling, and they don't like not being able to completely dictate to their independent contractors. It's a dictatorship with Vince McMahon at the top, and how dare you try and band together so that I can't bleed you dry whenever I feel like it. Dang it, this is my company, I started it, or bought it from my dad, whatever. This is the kind of thing that makes it hard to be a fan. I haven't felt this way since they released all that talent in that first wave. This is horrible business practice. I think that having somebody that tweets about supporting unionization is a lot better than having all of your fans and other superstars have a wave of backlash against you because shortly after sending that tweet, she gets released for no other reason than she tweeted that she supports unions. I don't understand what this company is doing. I don't know if this is Vince McMahon being a stupid old man who just reacts out of anger despite being well old enough to have known himself well enough to get a hold on that, which indicates that he just isn't interested in doing that at all. He's essentially set in his ways, which is a characteristic you'll often find amongst children, not necessarily as much adults when it's this much of an issue. Maybe therapy would help, but no, he's a real man. He doesn't even like to sneeze or sleep, so he's certainly not going to go see a therapist. He's certainly not going to go to anger management. So essentially, he's a pretend dictator that wants to dictate terms to everyone, which works when you're the only wrestling company in the States, but AEW is a thing. Despite WWE doing its best and putting NXT on Survivor Series last year and loading up NXT, putting Charlotte Flair over there and everything they tried to do to keep AEW from being successful, AEW has been renewed. AEW isn't going anywhere for a very long time. And the most important thing about AEW is that it is an alternative not only for the fans, but for the men and women who have made their lives or have given their lives to this business. So, I don't know if Zelina Vega will pursue legal action in this matter. That would certainly be something interesting to see. I certainly hope that Zelina either continues to stream or do your YouTube channel or goes to AEW. I hope that Zelina does whatever the hell Zelina Vega wants to do. And I hope that she does all the interviews in the world about this, because the last thing in the world that we can have right now is WWE getting let off of the hook. WWE has almost become a comical villain in a movie, in a cheesy Disney Channel movie, where they're just make decisions almost just for the sake of being evil. And I certainly hope that all those people that are disenfranchised and are upset and are interested in the idea of unions, I hope that they actually do form one, because it's great to talk about a union. It's quite another thing to be that first person that gets the ball rolling. And I'm sorry to Zelina Vega for getting released for no reason whatsoever. I hope that Vince McMahon, through whatever means it needs to happen, gives up the chair as head of WWE, because clearly he does not, well, one, understand what it takes to run a wrestling company that puts out a consistently good product, but two, reacts like a child having a temper tantrum because his mother is not giving him the exact toy he wants, so he thinks the best way to resolve that is to scream at his mother and try and get a new one. So as I said, it's harder to be a WWE fan right now than it used to be, not only because the product is worse as a whole, but because Vince needs to be gone. This is a classic Vince McMahon move to just, forget it, just release him. He doesn't think before he makes decisions. And frankly, that explains a lot of what he puts out on TV. But we're going to talk about like a good TV show led by somebody who like makes sound decisions and doesn't have a knee-jerk reaction to every single thing despite being on the earth quite a bit, or rather quite a few less years than his boss. We're going to talk about NXT. We're starting hot. It's going to be a title match. Leon Ruff is out. He is, as of last week, our new North American champion. He's holding the belt in his hands as opposed to putting it around his waist, so that's an improvement from last week. Now, I mentioned last week that this is just a story, and it's not a Leon Ruff story. It's a Johnny Gargano and Damian Priest story. Leon Ruff is a part of it, and it feels weird him being North American champion, but he really is a very talented guy, and he's earned the right to call himself an NXT superstar and put himself in a position to be here. Even if it is just a story, title wins mean a lot to me. They always have, and I assume that they always will, and I like to see someone who is really genuinely good get a chance that probably is too early, but at the same time, in wrestling, that's not really a thing. Your time is when your time is, and when you're handed the ball, that's when you run with it. Now he just has to make the most of all these TV opportunities that he's going to have. They have a little short video package of Leon Ruff. He says he's from Detroit. He has been wrestling for 3 years. He's been on Raw, SmackDown, NXT, and all that has led him to this moment. Now, Johnny, at this point, interrupts this video package, saying no one wants to see that crap. He says, everyone knows last week was a fluke. You're just a pawn in Damian Priest's stupid game to make me look like a fool. He says, Ruff isn't a real champion. He's a joke. And now the joke's over. That title is coming home to me. And he sucker punches Leon Ruff. This match is very similar to last week, where Johnny's basically taking all of the offense, except now Johnny's annoyed, so he's really laying into Mr. Leon Ruff. Leon Ruff being small makes him a great babyface to have in the ring, because he's very easy to throw around, and he's also a very good seller, so everything you do to him makes it look like you're killing him on every move. So even Johnny Gargano, who's not a big guy, can look like a monster against Leon Ruff. Johnny's setting up, it looks like, for a super kick, and he's distracted, and we cut to the entrance ramp and see that Damian Priest is walking out. At first, he's just standing on the entrance ramp. Leon Ruff rolls Johnny up, gets a two count, and then Leon Ruff starts to take over for a second, then misses a dive, and Johnny's back. So Johnny hits the apron DDT. The match is going to be over, but Damian Priest pulls Leon Ruff out of the ring. He says, sorry, kid, and hits Leon Ruff in the face. That means, one, the title can't change hands on a disqualification anyway, but more importantly, Leon Ruff technically won that match by disqualification. So they're both standing up by that entrance ramp, and Damian Priest, while Johnny's freaking out, says, that's two wins. So I get this is for a story, right? But you are making Leon Ruff look incompetent. And that makes the North American title look like a bit of a joke. And I don't really understand that. I get we're telling a story. It's just the North American title is going to become a casualty in this story if you don't do more with the person who's holding the title, even if it was a fluke and it came out of nowhere and it was only because Damian Priest was distracting him, still. We cut to the back and we see Cameron Grimes says he isn't afraid of Dexter Lumis, says he's just a regular man and Grimes ain't afraid of no man. Grimes is confident going into this blindfold match with Lumis, and in fact that is next as Cameron Grimes is out first for this match. So, Grimes, we know, is great. He's the most entertaining bad guy in WWE that's not named Roman Reigns. Don't at me. That's true. I don't want to hear it. Lumis is out next, looking creepy as ever. Grimes, they put the hoods on, and Grimes keeps trying to attack Dexter Lumis and missing. Lumis doesn't move at all. Grimes accidentally hits the ref in the corner, and he keeps attacking him, thinking that it's Lumis. He takes his hood off, and he realizes. So Grimes goes to hit that cave-in on Dexter, but Dexter moves out of the way and hits Grimes in the face, and now Lumis's hood falls off as well. They're outside the ring, and Cameron Grimes is thrown toward the fence, and he scales the fence and runs away, trying to get away from Lumis, who doesn't chase him. The camera just lingers on his creepy face. So we cut to the back, and William Regal's talking to Damian Priest. And Priest is laughing, saying that, you know, it was a... He says something to the effect of it was a joke. And Leon Ruff comes up and interrupts and says, I'm a joke to you? I'm the North American champion. Which means nothing, because Leon Ruff is a joke. Leon Ruff, the person, is not a joke. Leon Ruff, the wrestler, as he's being portrayed, is quite literally a joke. He's an enhancement talent that won the North American title off of a joke wheel segment last week against Johnny, and he won that title by a complete fluke and then beat Johnny again by a fluke like a joke would. So, yes, you are in fact a joke. Damian Priest is apologizing. He said, I didn't mean it like that. I shouldn't have said it. That's my bad. And Leon Ruff slaps him. He slaps him, and he says, he's nobody's joke. And he walks off. And Regal says, serves you right. And okay, fine. If this had been the first time I had seen Leon Ruff and Damian Priest, that would have been great. But you can't have Leon Ruff slap a guy after the fact, and now he's, like, serious. Like, he literally has been booked as a joke this whole time, and he literally just had a match with Johnny where he got maybe 5 moves of offense before somebody who's not even in the match had to pull him out because he was about to lose after a week. Like, he as the character is portrayed, the character is absolutely a joke, and having him slap a dude doesn't make me take him more seriously. It makes it look like an incompetent child having a temper tantrum. It reminds me of Vince McMahon. We have a video package for Io Shirai versus Rhea Ripley, nailed it, later tonight. That's one of those things where I could absolutely edit that out, but I think it's funnier to leave it in, and I'm always going to go with the joke, which makes me look worse, but it's funnier, so it's fine. We have different superstars and legends. Shawn Michaels is in there, Damian Priest, Ciampa. They're all making picks. A few of them pick Io, a few of them pick Rhea. You know the drill. The weird part is that the last pick is Triple H, and he picks Rhea Ripley. The problem with that is that I've been a fan of WWE for a long time, and I know that by WWE law, that means Rhea Ripley is 100% not winning. If you ever see somebody in a video package, in a place of authority, I'm talking Shane, Stephanie, Vince, Triple H, anybody that is like one of the faces of the company, as they've set it up, if you ever see them pick a match and they pick wrestler A over wrestler B, wrestler A is going to lose because they never want them, or rather the faces of their company, to be picking the person that is going to win. This goes back to Vic Venom, to Vince Russo being on one of those preview shows, I think, for the Royal Rumble, and he picked Bret Hart, who was going to be the winner. And I don't know if he actually knew it was going to be Bret Hart or not, but they freaked out at him because, oh no, you picked the actual winner. Even though, unlike NFL games, somebody's going to pick a winner. That seems to kind of be the whole point. But Triple H picked Rhea Ripley, and that was unfortunate because now I know that Rhea's not winning. That's not a, I'm so smart, I understand wrestling very well, thank you. My name is Zachary, I have a podcast. It's not that. It's just that I didn't even realize this about myself, but that's been burned into my brain, that if the person running the show picks a person, that person's gonna lose, man. So we cut from that to Dakota Kai and Raquel Gonzalez versus Toni Storm and Ember Moon, as all four of them get the enhancement talent entrance, which is to say they get no entrance, they're all in the ring. Blah, 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 Toni Storm beats Dakota Kai with a roll-up. This match was rushed, and I guess it was fine. It just meant nothing and was kind of shoved into the show for no real reason and clearly didn't have that much time, so they had to rush through stuff. So there's no reason for this except that Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell run out to attack Ember Moon and Toni Storm. And they throw them in the ring, and Raquel and Dakota beat up Toni and Ember in the ring, and I can't make myself care. I'd like to. I like the women that are involved in this. I don't know Indy Hartwell that well. Don't know Raquel Gonzalez that well, but I can't make myself care, man. None of these women are doing anything important right now. Candice just lost against Io Shirai, same with Dakota Kai. Ember Moon and Toni Storm came in directly challenging the NXT Women's Champion. Neither of them have had anything else to do with that stratosphere. They've just been kind of orbiting each other. So, what's important about this? I mean, I guess we're setting up some tag team stuff and we're setting up some rivalries and, you know, it's important, but I mean, I can't make myself care just because the bad guys came out and beat up the good guys. And it just feels like Toni Storm should be bigger. This is the kind of stuff that Ember Moon did her first run in NXT. So it's not as surprising to me as Toni Storm. But I don't know. What do I know? Pat McAfee's group arrived. It occurs to me as December 6th is going to be NXT War Games. And it's at this point that my dumb brain finally catches up to the fact that it's going to be the McAfee boys versus the Undisputed Era at War Games, which should be just awesome. We cut from them to the ring again, and Damian Priest is out, and he's dressed for a match, and they're announcing it like a match. And I guess he was going to be facing Johnny. I'm not 100% sure, but there's not a ref anymore. And so, like, I don't know if it was supposed to be Leon Ruff or Johnny. I think it was Johnny. But Damian Priest is standing on the ring steps, and Johnny runs in from the side and pushes him off, starts beating him up. Before we can do too much, Leon Ruff comes out and attacks both men. Ruff kind of sort of cleans house in that, like, he gets a little bit of offense in, but most of it is, like, kicking Johnny into Damian or kicking Damian into Johnny. And that's fine. I don't need him to be like a powerhouse. That wouldn't be believable. But it's kind of sort of cleaning house. He does get both of them out of the ring. So both men are outside the ring, and Leon Ruff is holding up his North America title. He's jazzed. And we cut, and both men look up at Leon Ruff at the same time from outside the ring. While they both go to get in the ring, Leon Ruff goes through the middle and jumps out of the ring and runs away. Because never forget that despite looking like a fighter for 1 second, Leon Ruff, the character, is a joke. Leon Ruff is a underdog babyface champion that ran away. He came out, he blindsided his opponents, and he ran away. That's what a bad guy does. Are we making him a bad guy? Because I guess we could try that, but it's weird for him to be a joke and then a fiery babyface good guy, and then a bad guy in 3 segments on the same show. I'm just a little confused what we're doing, other than trying to real hard to convince me that Leon Ruff doesn't think he's a joke, even though the character is a joke. And I keep saying he's a joke, because a lot of this is I'm not a joke from Leon Ruff or the announcers talking about it, and they bring it up a lot, and every time they did, I said out loud to myself, well, my dog's here. He's asleep. So, like, I'm not talking to my dog, but it just occurred to me that I kind of am, because he's the only audience here. You guys are here. I appreciate you very much, but I can't see you. I can see my adorable dog. He seems to be fine with my wrestling takes, except for the fact, again, he is asleep, so that's a bit hurtful. He was interested at first when I first started recording, and then he said, forget it, went back to the couch, and is currently napping. That's fine. You know what? It's fine. It's going to be just fine. So, Leon Ruff runs away. So, it says during the commercial break, Leon Ruff is leaving the building. This is the kind of thing you would do if you're turning him into a bad guy. So, maybe that's what we're doing. I don't know. But Regal comes out of his office and says, what was that? And Leon Ruff says, everyone thinks I'm a joke. So, here's the punchline. I'll face both of them. And he walks out of the building. Again, they brought it up again. I'm going to bring it up again. Can't stress this enough. Leon Ruff is a joke in the way that he's been used literally the whole time. That's a song I just wrote for you. And my dog perked his head up, so I know it was a good song. So, Rhea Ripley's out for the NXT Women's title match. Rhea Ripley always looks really cool. And also, like, she would, despite me being like 6'5", would beat me up real bad in a bar fight for no other reason other than she doesn't happen to like my face or its construction at that exact moment in time. And she would win, it would seem, because a lot of her outfit is spikes and chains, and those would hurt, and she seems to punch real hard. And is very strong, and don't get me wrong, I'm a big boy, but it seems like she'd be able to lift me without much effort. She's scary sometimes, but awesome at the same time. It's a lot of feelings. Io Shirai is out next. They had a tale of the tape earlier, at which point I realized that Io Shirai has been champion for 5 months and 2 weeks now. That feels about right. That feels about right. So she's had a substantial title reign. Not like a Bailey run where it's like a whole year, although we might get there, but she's been champion for a good grip of time now, and she's gotten to showcase herself real well. She's gotten to showcase her opponents really well. She has not had a bad match, well, really since she got to NXT, but she's not had a bad match for 5 months and 14 days that I can immediately recall. And on a lot of these shows, she has had the best match or the most interesting feud. And some of that is because Finn Balor, your NXT champion, has been off the shelf. But even when he was here, Io has been tearing it up with everybody. And she's working with what seems to be the best women's division anywhere in the world. But still, your champion puts a lot of burden on their shoulders and has to go out there and perform. And Io Shirai goes above and beyond every single time. Io's great. I didn't know who would win before the show started, and I honestly thought Rhea might, just because I thought of anybody on the women's roster at the moment, there's a lot of women that you could have be champion. Ember Moon could do it. Toni Storm could do it. Dakota Kai could do it, I guess. Candice LeRae could have done it. Like, there's a lot of women that could, but of the women available, the person who it seems is most primed to be the person that they would feel comfortable beating Io Shirai, which will be a big deal. I don't really remember the last time she lost, like, straight up. The most poised person for that position is Rhea Ripley. She's the former NXT, or a former NXT Women's Champion. Really, it should have been a straight line from Rhea to Io, but we took the Charlotte Flair detour. That's not Charlotte's fault, that's the company's fault, but we did. And then Io pins Rhea in that triple threat match, and we kept them apart for a while and built up Io, built up Rhea, and now we're back. And before the show, it felt like Io might lose the title, just because anytime Rhea Ripley is involved, she's on a different level from most everybody, save for Io Shirai. And so again, before the show, I thought that Rhea might just win. And then Triple H picked Rhea, so I know two things. I know Rhea's not winning, and I know we're going to get a really, 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 really good match. And we do have a really, really, really great match, and they get a lot of time. Io powerbombs Rhea Ripley from the apron through the announce table. Ow. Rhea gets back in the ring at literally 9.9 out of 10. The ref was just about to hit 10 and Rhea got in the ring. Now here's the cool thing. Io Shirai's been in the ring this whole time. They're both beat to hell, but Io Shirai has been sitting in the ring catching her breath. Rhea Ripley has been powerbombed through a table, was presumably unconscious, had to regain consciousness, and crawl back in the ring. So yes, she did beat the 10 count, however, she's certainly not ready to stand on her own power. So she's essentially on her stomach, barely alive, and because Io has had time to rest, you don't even see her anymore. All you see is her coming down onto Rhea Ripley with the moonsault. So Io hits the moonsault on Rhea and retains her title. I love that finish for a few reasons. Io had time to rest, so she had an advantage. Rhea wasn't so much beat straight up as she was put through a table, very badly hurt, and Io capitalized, not in the way a bad guy would, but in the way a fighting champion would. So, you keep the title on Io, you give her a big win, but you don't at all devalue Rhea Ripley because of the way this finish went. This is the kind of finish that you can do in a match and have them have a rematch soon after, because Io went for a big risk, big reward move with that powerbomb, and it happened to pay off. And I loved that they milked that 10 count for as much as it's worth to make it convincing that Io could pop up on the top rope, hit that moonsault. These are two of the best women's wrestlers anywhere in the world. Any company would be lucky to have them. Pretty please don't tweet anything about unions, because apparently you'll get fired for that. But they're going to be really great. And if they want to go to the main roster, then I hope that they're able to do that. Selfishly, I hope they do not, because I don't think WWE knows how to use a lot of women in general, but certainly NXT people. So I loved this match. This is one of my favorite matches that I've seen in the whole of the time that I've been hosting this podcast. I host the podcast reviewing the TV show every week. So usually I'm getting TV matches. And don't get me wrong, NXT's TV matches are on the whole better than Raw or SmackDown's. But they're still TV matches. They're not takeover matches. This was a takeover match in the main event of an NXT TV show. And holy hell, it was fun to watch. If you're going to watch one match this week, actually, you're going to watch two. You're going to watch Drew become WWE champion again, because that's great. And then you're going to watch this one, because, man, that was great. They embrace after the match. Mutual respect has been earned. Before Io even gets to the back, Finn Balor's out there. He's got the NXT title on his shoulder. Finn looks skinny. Makes sense. Not ragging on him. Finn has been out for a while now and presumably couldn't train the way that he usually does. He's got the leather jacket, he's got everything. His face just looks really skinny, which, again, makes sense. So Finn says, first things first, Io Shirai, congratulations, but let's get down to business. The last time you saw me, I defended the NXT title with a broken jaw in two places. Well, here I stand with three plates in my jaw that say I'm a bad son of a... And before he can finish, the McAfee boys interrupt. So the McAfee boys are... Well, McAfee himself with the McAfee boys are about to get in the ring. And Finn says that while the cat is away, the mice will play. But look what the cat dragged in. And the lights go out, and Undisputed Era are back. And they run out and they brawl with the McAfee boys. To this point, I should tell you that I don't know if the McAfee boys have an actual group name yet. Whether they do or not, I'm going to keep calling them the McAfee boys, because that's a funny couple words to throw together. At home, right now, out loud, you, me, go. McAfee boys. Wasn't that fun? That was a fun thing to say. And so we go off the air with Undisputed Era and the McAfee boys fighting again on December, what was it, 6th for NXT TakeOver War Games. We're getting Team McAfee boys versus Team Undisputed Era. This is the kind of match that should be in War Games. This is a huge personal issue between two groups of four. All of them are fantastic wrestlers, I guess, save McAfee, because he is extremely new, although he was extremely impressive in his match with Adam Cole. So, I'm very much looking forward to see what they do. The problem with the McAfee boys is that Pat McAfee is a great promo, and he's a great bad guy, but because they held back on having Undisputed Era come back until this week, it's essentially just been Pat McAfee talking for a long time. And I'll listen to Pat McAfee read me the phone book, essentially. But if you have your bad guy keep going on and on for too long, and they don't have a lot of points to go over, it starts to feel repetitive. And it felt that way this time until Undisputed Era came back. And so now you have something for McAfee to bounce off of. I think that's when he's at his best. I don't think his strength is necessarily doing a long-winded promo in a box. I think he's at his best when he has somebody to work off of, and so do the rest of the McAfee boys. And so it's going to be fun to see him and Adam Cole going back and forth and seeing both of those teams together. But we're starting to ramp up towards War Games. We have a lot of time to prepare for it. Presumably Finn Balor will be back. Should be noted that Finn Balor, I think when the lights went out, got out of the ring. I think it's a situation where Finn is going to be fine by War Games, probably, but I don't think Finn is fine yet, and so you very much had to make sure that Finn was clear of that. I mean, the man had surgery not that long ago, so it certainly wouldn't make any sense for him to already be getting in brawls and taking bumps. So Finn got out of there, but he didn't relinquish his title, which is fantastic. And I assume that means he'll be ready for War Games. We'll have to see how that shakes out. But it's great to see Finn. It was great to see that title match with Io and Rhea. That was my favorite match I've seen in a bit here. And Leon Ruff is still a joke. And that's about all I have for you here today. I should have said up top and forgot. And I'm going to be honest, I'm not going back to fix it. That you can always find me on Twitter. I am at ZachNXT. That's at ZachNXT. We're always talking about wrestling over there. I also generally get my news and notes ideas from you guys. So if you have anything you want to hear me talk about, or you just want to have a chat, anything you want to hear added or taken out of the show here, I do this for you guys. And I want to hear your feedback, not only on this show, but on NXT from this week, or Raw or SmackDown. What do you think about how Survivor Series is shaking up? You let me know over there, again, at ZachNXT, at ZachNXT. Otherwise, that has been me for this week. I have been your host, Zachary Smith. You have been the audience, and you have been fantastic. Thank you very much for listening.